Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome to Continued Success, the only Phillies podcast on the Good Fight podcast family. Hosted by a tornado survivor and what may eventually at one point sound like a shrieking cat. Liz Rocher is back on the mic of Yahoo Sports, having survived some of the terrifying natural weather phenomenons occurring in the Midwestern United States. We lost Liz. She jumped off in the middle of a podcast, actually, when tornadoes were striking Dayton, Ohio. And, you know, it's been a little bit of an adventure since, but this is Liz's glorious return back to podcasting. Liz, if you had been sucked into the sky during the initial onslaught while we were podcasting, would you say you would have died doing what you loved?
Let's just say I would have died. No, I would have died doing something I love, of course.
But I would have died doing something. And that is all.
Hello, everyone. The tornado didn't kill me. I'm back. It'll take more than that, damn it.
I'm back and more powerful than ever.
I have swallowed the tornado. It is now part of me.
The storm is inside me now.
Honestly, for how I feel these days, that's how it's going to be for a while.
That being said, I am also here, but I've been here and I'm kind of boring at this point. People are wondering which natural disaster is going to strike Justin. I think that's a fair question, but I am Justin Clue, the head guy at the Good Fight. It is, you know, my cat who you may hear yelling in the background. Again, an exclusive feature of this Phillies podcast. And this is Continued Success, where we talk about whatever Phillies or baseball topics we want to talk about. And then we segue maybe around the halfway point into chronicling the exploits of the 2009 Phillies as they celebrate their 10-year anniversary. I don't know if the actual 2009 Phillies are getting together to celebrate their 10-year anniversary, but
they didn't win a World Series. My guess is no.
I would guess no. I don't think they're going to have
No one wants to remember that.
I mean, they all saw each other in the 2008, so they
for the most part, yeah. I mean, Pedro's not coming back for that. He was on the team for what, 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm. And nobody knows where Cliff Lee is. He resurfaced like once in the past 7 years, disappeared into the Arkansas underbrush. But in any case, Liz, I know I am happy that you are okay and back, and I know you have been through a lot. So it is great to just hear your voice and have you on here talking about the Phillies again. I think it's nice for everyone to get us all a little more back to normal. We got to thank Allie Foster
for filling in. Allie, she did an excellent, marvelous job in my stead talking about a topic that I had a lot to say about, but I don't need to say it anymore because you guys said it all for me.
She did a great job. Well. Yes. We look forward to hearing more from Allie in the future. And then the week after that, we just didn't do a podcast. We just, you know, why, you know, that's just, there's enough talking going on.
I was still living in the basement of one of my fiance's coworkers, like the blogger I am and always have been.
we seek basements out. That's like the cool darkness. Like we feel most at home down there. So I get it. When I'm upstairs in my building, you know, I kind of just lay low to the floor. You know, it's a natural state. So we're constantly fighting it, but it's our natural state. But Liz, despite all the comings and goings of our lives off the podcast, the Phillies have played on. And I believe when we were talking last, we were probably discussing the really tough stretch of games the Phillies were playing against some of the National League's best teams. But that's over. They finished that stretch of 20 games, 10-10. Then they played a couple more games. They recently finished two series with the Reds, who aren't very good, and the Diamondbacks, who are probably better than people think they are. And they split those six games 3-3, 3-3. I said that four times because I almost said 3-3. They split them 3-3. There we go. They won 2 out of 3 against the Reds. They lost 2 of 3 against the Diamondbacks. And, you know, just kind of here we are. The problem is, Liz, we're sitting on the cusp of the Phillies playing the Braves. And that's got some even greater significance now because, Liz, Phillies have fallen out of first place. And I just want to ask you, you know, Phillies have been in first place for so long. This has been the thing we've gone back to time and time again when people have said, look, they have this problem. They have this problem. They have all these problems. This isn't working. Gabe Kapler's not working. The bullpen's not working. Rhys Hoskins isn't working. Bryce Harper's not working. But you could always just turn around and point to the fact that they were in first place. Even when that lead slimmed from a bunch of games to a few games to one game, it was like, yeah, but they're still a first place team. Well, we can't say that anymore. So the Phillies not being in first place anymore in 2019, Liz, that makes you feel blank.
As expected.
I was going to say, like,
happen.
Inevitable. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was going to happen sooner or later. I mean, they're too inconsistent to, you know, they're just an inconsistent team. They can't put it all together at the same time. So this was expected, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. This is just what happens. And we could talk about how exactly this happens, but we've been talking about it on every previous episode of this podcast and Hidden Season.
Waiting for it to happen, preparing ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So let's put it this way then. What is it surprising that this team jumped out into first place and held on to it? I mean, it's mid-June. You know, is it were you surprised that they were able to hold on to it for this long?
I think I am, if only because I think the Braves would be better, because that's really what it is. Because, I mean, the Braves had to be bad for a while for this to happen. The Phillies were great, but every other team had to sort of fall on itself first in order for them to have gotten there. And now things are course correcting to sort of a much more competitive landscape. And I'm not happy about it. I'd rather be comfortable, but it was never going to be that way. It was always going to be like this. You know, the NL East actually does have good teams in it beyond the Phillies, and they've been able to put together more consistency. The Phillies don't have that.
Yes, that is something I feel like we've seen from the Braves as they have righted the ship, so to speak. They have been able to more consistently produce. A lot of these teams have a lot of the same problems. Every one of these teams in the NL East has bullpen problems. Every one of these teams could have benefited from signing Craig Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel. The Braves did sign Dallas Keuchel. Not sure how much of a benefit that's going to be. I believe John Stolness and I had talked about, we kind of doubted the immediate impact that it was being framed that Dallas Keuchel was going to have on the Atlanta rotation. But needless to say, you know, that doesn't really even matter at this point. The Phillies are out of first place. The Braves have I believe, 1.5 game lead, having beaten the Pirates today while the Phillies had an off day. And so I asked, how long are you surprised they held on to first place for this long? So let me ask you this now. How long do you think it'll be before they get back into first place? I mean, it could be as easy as beating the Braves three times in this series, or it could be, you know, a couple of weeks. Well, I mean, where the state of the Phillies are in right now, how quickly do you see them retaking their position in first place in the NL East?
They're a game and a half behind the Braves right now. This is one of the most important series of the year so far, because if they choke and lose, you know, 2 of 3, that's a much larger deficit than they had. You know, it's not just a half a game or whatever. It, you know, all put together, it could be 3. It could be more. It could be not good to look at the standings after this. They could have a lot more ground to make up. And so it all sort of rides on this. Like, if they can come out of this, you know, without being swept, at least, God, I don't know why I'm so worried, but I am.
Oh, I'm worried about that too. See, this is the kind of thing. They swept the Braves to start the season. And, you know, you could say, okay, I'd believe it if the Braves were like, oh, we haven't thought about that. We you know, fixed ourselves. We're winning games now. Like, we know what we're doing. That series is behind us. Or I also think, and this is probably the case, they saw they weren't playing the Phillies. This is the first time I believe they're playing the Phillies since that sweep. Is that
I believe so, actually. I think you're right.
So they may have, you know, circled that on the calendar, and lo and behold, there's this very poetic Shakespearean narrative now going into it, where they are now facing the team that swept them to start the season, who, if they sweep them now, will they'll have a very significant lead in the NL East. This is a very big series for both these teams. I think you're right. This is probably the biggest series of the year. I mean, I feel like we framed a couple of series that way, but this one doesn't even really need that much framing. It's just sort of for obvious reasons.
It's been a while since I played anyone in the NL East.
Yes.
And so it's been a while. Like, they've been important series in the way that these are big competitors, but these are the games that matter. These are the games that matter more than just, you know, the six games you play with the Reds.
Yes. And they are, as many have noted, the Phillies are about to play 26 games against NL East opponents.
Oh, God.
In a row.
No.
And after that, as I realized looking at the schedule, when that stretch is over, they've got the Dodgers waiting for them.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I believe best team in the National League. So you want to talk, we were framing that last stretch as a rough stretch. This is the toughest stretch of the Phillies season. And it's not because the NL East is particularly a difficult division. When you think about the Phillies playing in this division, they play the Marlins, what, like 19 times. They're going to play a toothless Nationals team, a Mets team that is the Mets. And they get to play the AL Central in interleague baseball this year. So, like, okay, that's not too intimidating. But when you're playing them all in a cluster like this, the Phillies could get buried fast if they don't figure something out here. Like going 13-13 in this stretch, it's not going to be great because they'll come out of it in probably a very similar position to how they started it. And I don't think anybody wants that. That's not going to be good enough coming out of it. Not at this point. Not heading into the All-Star break.
No, they need to come out of this stretch, you know, better than 500. Mm-hmm. Like you say, it's a miracle for them to have gone 500 in the last stretch. I think that's underperforming. They had a chance to win a number of games that they ended up not winning, which is very frustrating to see, you know, especially when it's really going to come down to a couple of games. Yeah. But like, this is a stretch where they have to do better than 500 just to keep their head above water, because they have all these games. Imagine how much better the Mets and Nats could look.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If the Phillies just completely go cold everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Let's be depressing. Let's talk about the floor for this team.
Well, hey.
Jesus, I'm so sorry.
I mean, I feel like we do a pretty good job of maintaining the positives, but I think you got to be a little realistic here. The Phillies lost a game. The Phillies and their vaunted offense that is supposed to be their biggest strength finished their homestand, their six-game homestand, losing a game to the Diamondbacks 2-0. They couldn't put a run on the Diamondbacks. They had to stew in that today when they didn't play. Meanwhile, the Braves have won, what, six in a row. They swept the Pirates in four games, something that hadn't happened since 1991. They beat the Pirates 6-5 in, I believe, extra innings today. They beat them 8-7 in extra innings last night. They don't have an off. This wasn't an off day for them. No, it was not extra innings today. They just beat them by a run. But they're hot. They're winning late games. They're winning dramatically. They're holding off rallies.
That's what the Phillies looked like early in the season.
Right. And now they're getting the Phillies, a team that's pretty cold at home. So I think it's fair to be a little realistically cynical about this. Now that we've done that, now that we have addressed that, I think we can flip the coin over here. Liz, this series with the Braves, it's not crazy. Obviously, it from what we've seen lately, it seems less likely that this team is going to sweep the hottest team in the NL East right now. But what do you see going right here for the Phillies as they enter this pretty intimidating stretch with what we're calling the biggest series of the year?
I'm looking up probable pitchers right now.
Just scrambling down.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
good things.
Yes. not knowing the probable pitchers for another few seconds or so, I would tentatively say the pitching, maybe. Because Eichhoff, who I was so high on, is now out of the rotation after just sucking so hard.
Yeah, but okay. See, that's a positive though. He is out of the rotation.
You can no longer hurt the Phillies in the beginnings of games.
Exactly.
He can only pull a Vince Velasquez and hurt them at the end.
The Phillies are going there. They've proven that if someone's not doing their job, this has typically just been applied to the rotation. But if somebody's been unable to get the job done, there's a very clear, you know, stretch of time, 4, 5, 6 bad starts in a row, and you're out of here. Jared Eichhoff has succumbed to that, and he will not be pitching in this series, which is that's good. That is good. It's sad. We obviously thought, you know, on one of these podcasts, we were talking about how, maybe it's Jared Eichhoff's year. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like for now, doesn't look like it is going to be Jared Eichhoff's year. And we were saying that in lieu of Nick Pivetta having a breakout year. However, Nick Pivetta got demoted, came back, threw a complete game, the first of his career. Yeah. Said the F word on a post game interview.
Beautiful. It was so great.
It was so cool.
He's pitching Friday. He's pitching tomorrow.
He is pitching in game one. He is facing Max Fried, who is also having an effective year for Atlanta. But Nick Pivetta, I think it's fair to say, look, I'm somebody who was like, oh, Nick Pivetta sucks because he looked like he was sucking.
He was sucking hard. Mm-hmm. He was really bad. He deserved to go down.
Yes, and he needed to relearn how to throw to hitters. He didn't want to put it in the strike zone. He didn't want to throw to guys, and they sent him down to AAA. He relearned where the strike zone was and that he could throw in there, that he could rely on his defense, that he could miss bats. He came back to the major leagues and throws a complete game. You know, like that's the first of his career. That's progress. That's what you want to see after you make adjustments like that for one of your young pitchers.
Exactly.
Now he's coming up and you know, he's been hot ever since. He's allowed 4 runs in his last 20 innings. And like I said, then he threw his first complete game. So he's facing Max Fried on Friday. And I think Nick Pivetta, I think we can call him a positive right now. You know, his ERA still sits at 4.93, but that's because he's had a bumpy ride this year. But if we're monitoring his progress, I think, you know, that's something. Him starting out, I think, is that's a good weapon to throw at the Braves. Obviously, Zach Eflin has actually been a more probably the most, if you're going to use, I hesitate to use the word reliable because I'm not calling anybody in the Phillies rotation reliable this year, but Eflin's probably been the most reliable, but you're not getting him in game two.
Sadly, getting there,
Aaron Nola, who I wish I could be excited to see in this series, going up against Sean Newcomb, who I think this is also a positive. Newcomb went a little bit of a Pivetta route this year for the Braves. This will be on Saturday his first start since coming back from the minor leagues, where he was sent in the beginning of May. He's a lefty, so that always brings with it its typical conundrums for the Phillies, but still, this is a guy who has struggled this year, and we saw Nick Pivetta get hammered enough, so maybe this guy, who is like the Braves version of Nick Pivetta in the sense of the year he's having, perhaps this is someone the Phillies offense could beat up on, which would be necessary given that Aaron Nola has been struggling this year. So at this point, Liz, Aaron Nola pitching, is this a positive or a negative for the Phillies?
I'll never be able to say it's a negative because you know the type of pitcher he is. And so you can never stop believing that he'll turn it around because there's always a chance that he will, that this will be the start where he figures it out and he sees what he's been doing wrong or whatever it is that's been happening, you know? So I can't say he's a negative. I guess it doesn't mean he's a positive, but he's not a negative, at least. I'll always be excited to see him pitch.
If we're measuring it in percentage points, with 100% chance means definite win, 0% means obvious loss, how much of a percentage does Aaron Nola give the Phillies to win right now?
Wow. I have to err on the side of like maybe 40%. Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to hit 50 with him just yet. No. But I think if we're looking for positives, I think we can say that what you said, that he's somebody you will always believe can turn it around. You know, I think it'll, he would have to be struggling a very long time for the Phillies to send him down to the minor leagues the way they did with Nick Pivetta, because he just, he established himself last year. Now I miss looking at him that way and feeling like he's going to, okay, it's a NOLA day. Like we don't have to worry as much. We know he's going to go deep in the game. We know he's going to keep the opposing team off the board for a while. You know, it's fine. I miss thinking of him that way, but at the same time, yeah, this is a guy who's undeniably struggled this year, and he's fully capable of turning it around. And I guess all we can do is hope that Saturday is the day that happens, or that continues. I would say lately we've seen more and more hints that he's in there. His last start against the Reds, he didn't look bad. And he's got a 3.48 ERA in his last 9 starts. So again, not exactly like Aaron Nolan numbers, but certainly more like it. Absolutely. Problem is Newcomb being a left-hander. Bryce Harper is hitting .282 with a .908 OPS against lefties this year, but other guys in the lineup, not as much success. Reese Hoskins is hitting .214 versus lefties. So that's not great. And I mean, these are the guys who you got to see picking it up. I feel it's crazy, and this is what we're going to get into after this first break, but it's crazy looking at the numbers, looking at the offense, certainly looking at the pitching staff, that this team that went out and bothered to acquire so much talent, not even just like talent that turned into talent, talent that was talent, talent people were aware of, the high profile deals the Phillies put together to stack this lineup with the kind of bats it has, that not only have they not been winning every game by 10 runs, but also that their all-star representation is kind of an interesting question right now. And we're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. And we're back on continued success. We left talking about the all-star game, which is still, well, it's less than a month away. It's July 9th this year, Liz. That seems early, right?
It does. Yeah. It seems, very early.
And it's in Cleveland, which is
also
a place.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will be diving much more into all-star coverage as that nears, but it's less than a month away. Voting has of course begun, and the Phillies, like every team, have started their campaigns to get you to vote for their teams. Now in the past few years, it's been hilarious because every team in Major League Baseball is sort of just assigned their marketing for the All-Star game. And they're like, oh, vote for this guy, vote for this guy, vote for this guy. And the Phillies have had such bad teams that players who have just been terrible or who you knew were going to be on the team much longer.
Pat Neshek.
Right.
All-Stars.
I remember, a couple of years ago at this point, whenever he was on the team, I was told there was a reason for this. I never found out what it was, but the Phillies were doing that typically where they were just like, oh, vote this guy for left field, vote this guy for third base, when it was clear like they were not very good and they certainly weren't going to the All-Star game. But they just straight up like didn't do it for Tyler Goodell, who was at the moment like one of their starting outfielders.
I remember how angry you were about this.
Oh, I was hoping he would like, I don't know, turn into something, and he never did.
Yeah.
But I thought that wasn't super fair to just, you know, they were trying to get Carlos Santana into the All-Star game last year, and you know, God help him, it was that whole Carlos Santana on the Phillies was what it was, but he certainly wasn't putting up All-Star numbers last year.
No.
But in any case, we're looking at another year where we thought we're looking at the first year where we thought in recent memory that the Phillies All-Stars would be a little more clear. We were making guesses in the Good Fight Slack channel earlier in the season at which 4 or 5 Phillies would be in the All-Star game. And Liz, for a first place team with Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Gene Segura, RIP, Andrew McCutchen, Reese Hoskins, Aaron Nola, Pat Neshek. I mean, with all these guys, you'd think that we wouldn't be totally off base making that assumption. Well, Liz, turns out you were totally wrong.
I was an idiot.
And I had to bring up to a couple of our Good Fight staff members, and I wasn't the only one to mention this, who is the Phillies All-Star? I kind of had to just submit Hector Neris? Is this possible that on a team this stacked? I mean, the guy's 14 for 14 in save opportunities. Are we just looking at a situation where the Phillies are a bullpen arm who gets thrown into the roster by a final selection or something? I mean, what are we looking at here?
I mean, unless they're willing to give it to Scott Kingery, maybe.
Scott Kingery would be a great choice. But he missed some time. I mean, he came back.
He missed some time, like Zach Eflin, but he also has missed time.
I mean, this is just a situation.
No, he's made all those starts. What am I talking about?
But he hasn't had an all-star first half, I would say. Being the most reliable starter in the Phillies rotation is not like an award. That's
he's got an ERA of 2.81. He's got two complete games.
Sure. Okay. I mean, that's all right. That is fair. That's totally fair. However, he's got multiple starts where he couldn't get out of the fourth inning.
That's also true. I'm not denying that, but I'm saying he's had moments of brilliance that I think could warrant an all-star selection. But I really think like the list is him, Scott Kingery, who missed some time, and Hector Neris.
Yeah, which I don't think anyone would have picked those three players. Certainly not Eflin, and certainly not Neris, and certainly not Kingery.
My God. I'm just looking at the pitchers' ERAs right now for the Phillies. Outside of the starters, there are 4 guys with an ERA under 4.
Mm-hmm.
That is, wow.
Now, we did receive word that the Phillies do have somebody in the top 10 at their position in All-Star voting. Did you see who this was, Liz?
Was it? Was it the most boring player on the Phillies?
That depends on who you are referring to when you say that.
I'm referring to Cesar Hernandez.
It was Cesar Hernandez, yes, at second base. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's,
nothing against Cesar, but his personality is baseball player with receiving
hair. As far as we know there's nothing. He's a player on the Phillies. He is from Venezuela. He is 29 years old. The end.
Yes,
he led the league in triples in 2016 with 11. We're in 2018. And Liz, I guess the surprising part for me is that Cesar is being voted that high. I don't think he has a huge shot. I think the National League has almost all of the good players this year. I think there's a couple of positions where you just don't have a shot when you're hitting 264 as Cesar is. So I'm just impressed that it's not even like, oh, we're hearing that this coach who likes him is trying to get him on the team. No, it's like he's being voted by fans into this.
Ow!
All right. Because like you said, he's almost an anonymous character. He was a background guy for the Phillies. He was a quad A farmhand, it felt like, who really turned into an effective second baseman. There's a stretch of time in some of the lean years of recent memory where we were referring to him as one of the best leadoff hitters in baseball. He's been a little back to some of the questionable base running gaffes or defensive errors that we thought we'd seen the last of a couple of years ago, but we're seeing a couple more of those this year. Yeah, he's just been farting out his ear a little bit, and that's fine. But I mean, it's good to see any Philly in the top 10, but it's a little surprising that it's Cesar. I think I thought maybe Bryce would just coast in through name recognition, but I don't know. I think everybody's kind of mad at him. It doesn't help that he, hasn't been having a great year. He certainly hasn't been having a Bryce Harper year. But yeah, I think everybody's just pretty resentful of him too. So I'm sure that's not helping. I don't know. I mean, are you surprised this is where we're at right now?
Yeah. I mean, you can't. Anyone who says no, I'm not surprised, is a lying liar who likes to just be that stupid guy that everyone hates all the fucking time. No, you can't. If you say you're surprised that Cesar, you have to be surprised that Cesar Hernandez is the Phillies' lone all-star in the top 10 anywhere. Like, that's bonkers.
I mean, Gene Segura is hitting 284 right now. His OPS is only 784, but he's got 25 extra base hits for the Phillies so far this year. I mean, he was an extra base machine, it felt like, for a couple of weeks. And when he's not doing that, I feel like I've watched Gene Segura get on base due to misfires by the defense or just weird crap happening on the field more times than anybody else this year. I don't think he's particularly out of the running. I mean, he's been one of the Phillies' best players as well, but we haven't heard too much word about interest in him as an all-star. So yeah, I mean, at catcher, Wilson Contreras of the Cubs is leading. And you know what? JT Realmuto's third in catcher voting. He's just
There we go. That makes more sense. I was just really thinking to myself, like, where's JT? And then I didn't look it up. I figured hopefully no one else would remember.
That's my bad. I don't think I said that no other Phillies player is in the top 10.
Then maybe that was me misunderstanding.
That was or maybe if I did, that's just me being an idiot because it's just blatantly untrue. Gene Segura is fifth in the All-Star voting at shortstop. Cesar, good Lord, I was just talking about him. Cesar is fourth in the top 10.
That's him as a player, man.
At second base, Rhys Hoskins is seventh at first base. But again, Bryce Harper does have 242,000 votes, but and Scott Kingery does have less than 100,000. Even Andrew McCutchen got a couple, even though he's out for the rest of the season. But this isn't super significant because when you're even if you're in the top 10, you don't have to be too low to be pretty out of contention. I mean, yeah, Gene Segura is fifth at shortstop. He's got 138,000 votes. Javier Baez is leading the pack, as he should be. He's got over 850,000. He's leading Dansby Swanson of the Braves by like 600,000 votes. So
yeah, like you can't vote for anybody but him. Like Right. Really, there's honestly no other choice.
Yeah, obviously at third base, the Phillies don't have anybody in that race. And Cesar's, I think, the one who got mentioned the most because he is the one who has probably the best chance. But where even there, I would be very doubtful. Ozzie Albies is leading the pack there, followed by Mike Moustakas of the Brewers and Ketel Marte of the Diamondbacks. And
oh no, there's no chance. Yeah. The Phillies are setting a pitcher this year.
Exactly. So that's kind of why we sort of saw these results and kind of wound up with Hector. Like, I don't know. The relief pitching has been so, even when a guy has had success, it's like he's had to leave because his shoulder fell apart a couple days later. Hector's been the one who's been out there the most and has had the most reliable success, whereas in the rotation, yeah, you're right. You're right about Eflin. I could see that realistically happening, but I think when I had initially come to this decision, we were still pretty close to a couple of his more disastrous starts and he hadn't put together too much success. But you're right, at this point, he's got two complete games. And if you're looking for a Phillies all-star just to represent the Phillies, he wouldn't be an insane choice.
No, and it would be really cool to see him go. He would be a first time all-star. It would be cool for the Phillies to send someone like that.
I think
it was cool the last time it happened.
Yes.
But we don't have to talk about that.
First time All-Stars are great. But I think the votes that are really going to send you off the deep end here, Liz, is the catcher votes. Like I said, Wilson Contreras leads at the catching position, which makes sense. Wilson's having a great season. He was somebody who the Cubs, I don't know if they necessarily like pulled him aside and said, hey, look, if we're going to contend this year, you're one of the guys who's really going to have to like put together a season that you haven't really had before. But that was sort of, in a lot of the Cubs 2019 analysis, it was like, well, if we see more from a guy like Wilson Contreras, that's going to pick up some slack where, we haven't played. And that's exactly what he's done. He's hitting 277, but it's, again, that's after starting pretty hot. So, and Cubs fans are going to pack the ballot. So Wilson Contreras leads that. And JT's in third behind Brian McCann.
What the fuck?
So, Braves.
What is wrong with people?
Braves fans are coming out this year because they have.
Who are they? Where are these people?
They have a lot of actual all-stars on the Braves. And Brian McCann's hitting 279. He's leading the league in sacrifice flies. Plus they love him.
Ranking motion.
Yeah, they just love him. They've got Albies. They've got Acuna. they've got some guys that they should be excited about. And Brian McCann gets people excited because they love him in Atlanta, because he's like back.
I hate the Braves.
But I honestly got to say, JT Realmuto has, he is the best catcher in the National League.
I agree.
I think by far. And I think he should be the All-Star, even though he cooled off as well. The numbers may not dictate it, but if you were trying to, and that's, I think, the difference between being an All-Star and being the best, you could, I think the All-Star game's about having guys who it would be their first appearance, who are having like that great year, or having that great, at least first half, and they get their shot to play in this like cool exhibition game that's celebrating the best players in the game. I think that's what that's for. However, if you were looking for the best catcher in the National League to be like, who's going to be our catcher? Let's pick the best one. That has to be JT. Not only is he capable of tremendous offensive production, he also, you can't run on him. Like, he provides that, he scratches that defensive itch in a way that so many guys just, you know, that's become way less of an asset for catchers. You give up a lot on guys stealing bases, and not with Realmuto. He's got, what do they, like the pop, him getting into going from his stance to actually throwing runners out is
pop time.
Pop
yeah.
time is definitely is the best in the National League. So, yeah, that's a little disappointing. If his numbers were a little better, I think we wouldn't be having as much of a debate about this. But, you know, fans get to vote, and this is the result of that. Braves fans are going to vote for Brian McCann. They just are. It's the reality of the situation, unfortunately.
Braves fans get to vote, and we all have to deal with the fucking consequences.
Yeah, and we might wind up just watching Hector Neris pitch, you know, to two guys in the seventh inning in Cleveland. Does that sound like a fun All-Star game, Liz?
Had you check all over again? Was that just last year?
Was that last
year? 2 years ago.
Nishak was, no, it was Aaron Nola was last year.
Yes, you're right. Aaron Nola. Oh, yes. He was the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Aaron Nola, Pat Nishak, you know, back in, what was it, 2012? Carlos Ruiz and Jonathan Papelbon closed out the All-Star game together. So that was
theoretically nice.
Kind of nice. It was 50% nice. Right. Yeah. Symbolically nice.
I mean, it was romantic because it was, you know, a Phillies pitcher and catcher, and it's cool when they could do that in the All-Star game.
Sure.
But
why not? Man, I feel like we've just been winding up in this situation every year when July rolls around. And I just thought we weren't going to be having this conversation this year.
Oh, it's real depressing. I feel like JT's the best chance. I feel like we all got to put our votes and all of our attention behind him.
Yeah. Let's make it happen. Let's get behind JT here.
You can vote like 17 times a day or some, you know, I looked at doing like a weird Google voting, like just have people vote.
It's five now, I think. They shrunk it down to five times a day. The world's a different place, Liz. You've been away for a long time.
I guess I have. Things have changed. And no, it's a 17. You just look up JT Realmuto on Google and you vote for him for 17 times. I'm doing it right now.
Why 17? Why are they 17?
I don't know. Oh, I don't think it's 17 times a day. It's 17 times total? What? That's not what it said.
You know, we used to live in a world that made sense. And frankly,
we used to live in a world where they distributed paper ballots and you could fill out, you know, 40 of them sitting there at a game because they distribute them like they were Monopoly money.
Oh, God. Yeah. They would just throw stacks of them into the lower sections. One of my favorite baseball.
Use them as napkins. Use them as umbrellas.
My grandparents took my cousin and I on a cross region. A baseball road trip one summer when we were just kids, and it was really close to the All-Star game, and we just grabbed handful after handful of all these ballots, and we were just filling them out in the car, and we would get to the next stadium, we would drop off like hundreds and hundreds of these paper ballots, just voting for.
What were you voting for?
Just voting for all Phillies players or Orioles in the American League. That was our AL team. So we were just we went from we hit Pittsburgh, we hit both the Chicago stadiums, we went up to Detroit. So we saw a bunch of stadiums that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And yeah, we rolled up and just opened the car door. All those little Chads would fall out. We would just dump these armfuls of ballots into the closest usher's hands. And they'd be like, holy
shit. I'm imagining it like that scene in God, Real Genius at the end with the popcorn. Yes. Like the popcorn is just coming out of the car. It's just all ballots.
It was exactly like that. And you know what? I was going to say all of our players made the All-Star game, but I actually have no memory of that. And that era of Phillies baseball, Phillies did not deserve to be All-Stars.
No.
Well, we will talk about what was going on with the 2009 Phillies, shake free of this light malaise we have towards the 2019 Phillies. And we'll talk about what was going on with the 2009 Phillies around this time 10 years ago when we come back from this break. Well, Liz, 2009, June. I mean, this is when baseball season is really taking off, frankly. You know, we called that other podcast hitting season because that's what Charlie Manuel said. It was when the weather got a little warmer, and he said the ball traveled faster at that time, and it certainly did. It just wasn't always the Phillies who were the ones hitting it, unfortunately.
Womp womp,
sad trombone. But I had meant to talk about this with us before your brief hiatus. So I'm just going to go back on
the incident.
And this is probably a topic we've touched on before. But in reading about 2009, it just it came up again because it happened again that year too. So when a star player is struggling, that just sort of becomes the story. When he's hitting the ball and everything's fine, it's normal and you're not really talking about. You might see a little tidbit at the bottom like, oh, hey, JT Realmuto has been he's 10 for his last 18. He's got an extra base, two extra base hits in the last three games or whatever. You see little notes like that. But when a good player has those expectations already in place, is playing well, you don't get a story about that. It's when they're struggling that you're going to get think pieces about it or interviews about it. This is just how it works. This is what people care about when things aren't working. In a long season with a lot of moving parts, things are going to go wrong all the time. And if you really want to, you can find something wrong with any team every day. We do it on this podcast all the time. Obviously, it has dominated the conversation about the 2019 Phillies that Bryce Harper has not looked good and is in fact striking out much more than at any other point in his career. He's got 87 strikeouts, I believe, which is enough to lead the league. It's a lot. So Jimmy Rollins went through this in 2009. He was the Phillies' loudest mouthpiece. He was cocky. He was called out for not hustling, and yet he was the 2007 National League MVP. He was less than 2 years removed from being the most valuable player in the league. He was a runner-up to only Albert Pujols for Rookie of the Year in his first year. And Rollins against the Reds did one of those things that contradicted everything he's known for. He worked a deep count after falling behind a Johnny Cueto. He laced an extra base hit that knocked in a run and put another runner in scoring position. And he turned on the motor to stretch that hit into a double. But that wasn't enough. The people stuck with that same reputation that Jimmy Rollins, when he's struggling, it's because he's not hustling. And I got to tell you, Liz, we find parallels all the time between the past, both on this podcast and on the Dirty Inning, just between what Phillies teams have been criticized for and what they're currently being criticized for. And it doesn't, in some cases, seem any less ridiculous than it does now. And I got to tell you, we've had plenty of years where guys, specific guys seem like they're getting picked on more than anybody. This year, I just have heard more talk about not hustling out of the box about multiple guys. I just feel like I've heard it more from all of the Phillies broadcasters. It just comes up. John Kruk on the TV broadcast and Larry Anderson on the radio. You just hear it a lot from them in particular, but it's coming up a lot and just also by the media, a lot by fans. It's just, this play happened because he didn't bust it out of the box. And I think the most high profile version of this was Gene Segura falling down on a swing on the play that Andrew McCutchen got hurt because it allowed Ian Desmond. One of the two Ians to let that pop fly drop and turn it into the play in which McCutchen got hurt. I mean, that was such a stupid thing that I think it's ridiculous to blame anyone for that. That's just a situation you're looking for blame for. And John and I talked about this on Hidden Season. To me, and he more or less agreed with this, but to me, that's just somebody trying to go after trying to get their own name sort of a part of the story to be like, oh, well, it has to be someone's fault. So it's obviously Gene Segura's fault. But I got to tell you, night after night, I'm hearing, you know, Cesar didn't bust it out of the box there. Mikel Franco didn't bust it out of the box there. Rhys Hoskins didn't run on a pop fly that Joey Votto lost in the sun during the Reds series. And you didn't really hear too much about that. And he should have been on second base, but he was at first. So I don't know. I mean, we don't have to talk about hustling. It's just, I don't know, Liz, after at least 10 years of this storyline, I mean, don't you just want to hear about something else?
I would love to hear about anything else. People have an obsession with talking about it. It happens a lot. I mean, maybe that's why, but it's really, it's just so boring. It's so tired. For the love of God, can't we find anything else to talk about? Why is it always this?
I mean, I feel like there are occasions where if a player doesn't bust it out of the box and isn't hustling, that does upset me as a fan. Like, I saw the clip of Cliff Lee hitting a pop-up and not even running at all out of the box, when he was still with the team, just literally waving his hand at the play and walking off the field before it was done. He got booed by the away stadium, even though he was out. And like, you know, I look at that and I'm like, you know what? That shit does piss me off a little bit. It's like, you know, get out there. If you're going to let that, if you're going to not run on the play at all, then like, what are we all doing here? This all crumbles if the players decide like, I'm not going to even bother. Now, that being said, I think the occasions of that happening are much rarer than the coverage of incidents like this would indicate. Like, I don't think Gene Segura did anything wrong. I think Rhys Hoskins probably, you could make an argument, did something wrong. But again, it wasn't the biggest deal in the world. It wasn't like he just was walking back to the dugout when the pop-up fell. But, you know, that being said, the Phillies were playing the Reds in 2009, and this Reds series was going to be a real test. They beating the Nationals, as the Phillies did in four games, wasn't hard to do in 2009. The Phillies didn't win four pretty ball games. One was shortened by weather to be five innings. One went into extras after the bullpen blew a lead. And in another, they had to come from behind. But when they took on the Reds and Johnny Cueto, who had a 1.93 ERA and was looking like a top National League hurler, the Phillies beat him 4-3, thanks to Jimmy Rollins and Cole Hamels turning in the kind of performances people were now expecting of them. So you and I call out or laugh about fans being unreasonable a lot on this podcast. And I will say that if you complain so much that you at least appear to be literally unable to enjoy a team, then you're not really a fan at all. However, the instinct to be cynical exists in this region for a reason. And I understand. I feel it too. I can go full negative, but I refuse to stay there anymore because it's just not worth it to get weighed down by irritation over a situation you can't control. But that being said, that's exactly who I was in 2009.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I watched.
It was so easy to be there.
Maybe it's an age thing. I'm sure it's partially an age thing. 10 years ago, I wasn't worried about the things I'm worried about now. So I think back then it was like, yeah, the Phillies might lose tonight and that would ruin my day. Now I'm just like, did we switch insurance? What's going on with that? And what's going on with like laws? They seem like we're going to run into and like the future of our country and like pollution and the planet and just, you know, existential crises. But back then I watched every Phillies game pacing around the room and I made searing, hyperbolic, poorly conceived criticisms of a game I didn't even fully understand. And I'm sure I was just as mad at Jimmy as anybody and Cole Hamels. In retrospect, looking back, it was the absence of those two guys that I would say probably cost the Phillies the World Series, if you want to put it dramatically. But is I think the 2009 was the year we found out how far this team could go without a top offensive contributor. Well, without one of their top offensive contributors and their previous World Series MVP. Chase Utley stepped up in October. Cliff Lee stepped up in October, but without that extra punch in the rotation of Hamels and with Jimmy struggling at the beginning of the season as he did, the Phillies, you know, they wound up in the position they wound up in. The Phillies couldn't take the hits the Yankees were dishing out. And I don't want to jump ahead to the World Series, but I think we both remember Chase Utley was really the only one who was hitting significantly, and that hurt the team. So I don't know. I guess I'm trying to take a reason to take at something that I am always criticizing. So I don't know. Am I completely off base?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I remember that time too. Like when we were that age, like the Phillies were a huge part of our lives in a different way than now. Now the Phillies are a part of our lives and we're constantly writing about them or talking about them. It's part of our job. Then it was something we devoted our lives to because we were purely passionate about it on a personal level before we found other soul-sucking things to do with that passion.
Yes.
Kidding. We love all of it. But it's just interesting to remember how I felt back then. You know, it's not like it was an unnatural way to be when you're that young. You know, you're not a teenager anymore, but there's still that, I always feel like there's that dramatic part of you that, you know, dies a little bit more every year as you get older. But, you know, when you're that young, the teenage drama queen is still pretty much in there.
Well, you know, we get criticized sometimes for being too negative, and I don't know what people are talking about, frankly. I feel good every time we record this podcast. Well, hey, look, it's a long season. We learn and relearn that every year. The Phillies had a 16-6 record on the road at this point. They had hit 35 home runs in 22 road games, which is crazy. That is crazy.
Wow.
Yet they had lost 4 of 5 before this series with the Reds, and they were a 500 team. Then they won 5 in a row, and Jimmy, as always, summed it up in the Philadelphia Daily News when he said, "That is baseball. We understand that. You guys understand that because you're here. And believe it or not, the fans are understanding that because we did win. So now they know, you know what? Let's give them 162 games and see what happens." So at this point, they have 125 games left. And Jimmy, as always, has a very reasoned take. No one would ever have questioned Jimmy's passion, but I feel like Jimmy was very healthy about baseball. You know, that there's that scene in that stupid movie Fever Pitch where they see some of the Red Sox out in public just eating dinner after a big loss. And these fans are like freaking out because the players are just like being normal and going about their daily lives, even though they had lost this big, World Series game. And the fans are like, why are they having a good time, or why are they doing anything normal? Why aren't they like crying in the corner like us? Why are they so okay? And I mean, that's how you got to be as a player. And I feel like Jimmy was always, he had a very healthy take on baseball. He was able to get worked up and lead the team. But when shit happens, which it does in baseball, he was able to look at it and be like, hey, you know what? That's baseball. And it sucks. You want to win. Sometimes you don't. And you got to be able to move on with your life. And that's something.
It's their job. Like, I have feelings about Fever Pitch, but I really like, you know, I really like the way it portrays fandom as a disease.
Me too. I just hate Jimmy Fallon. I think the idea is solid.
Yeah, I like how they adapted it. You know, I think there are people who have reasonable criticisms of it, and I can't really deny any of that. But like that scene, I thought was a really great thing to say, because where have you seen someone say that in film before? Like, these guys are just doing their jobs. For them, it's a job. You know, they're done. They have lives. They've got families. You know, for us, this is what we do when we're not at work. For us, this is our, you know, our fun time. Of course, they care, but they're not going to treat it the same way we do. I thought that was an interesting thing to put out there and put on screen, since it's a hard thing to grasp for some people.
It really is. Yeah. But all of that being said, it was now mid-June 2009. And Liz, these were the days of Phillies starting pitcher Antonio Bastardo.
Should I say
Antonio Bastardo? Being told that I should not say that. All right. Okay. Well, from June 2nd to June 25th, 2009, the Phillies ran the great Antonio Bastardo starting experiment. By the end of it, he'd thrown 22 2/3 innings. He had an ERA of 6.75, and he'd allowed 26 hits, 9 walks, and hit 4 batters. By the end of that 5th game, Bastardo had a shoulder injury. The Phillies had lost 10 of 12 games, and Charlie Manuel was ready to eat his own desk. Comparisons to both a volcano about to blow and a dam about to burst were used to describe both the manager and his team by the local paper. People seemed sure that eventually this team would start scoring again and do something to secure their lead atop the NL East, which hung by half of one game. Chase Utley was so mad he showed an emotion. That emotion was anger, and he showed it. Oh, yeah. He showed it to the umpires during that June 25th game against the Reds, or against the Rays, which the Phillies lost 10-4.
I love angry Chase.
Once on a bad pitch call that led to a walk and then a Rays rally, and again when umpires determined that, yes, actually they could use instant replay to review a ground rule double for the Rays after the week before Greg Dobbs had hit a ball to a comparably indeterminate spot, and the Phillies had been told that no, actually the umpires could not review that play. So everybody was pissed. Nothing was working. What had happened? The Phillies started the month about to set out on a West Coast road trip against the Padres, who were 17-6 at home, and the Dodgers, who were 18-5 at home. They'd lost Brett Myers to injury for the season, but things were looking all right. Joe Blanton and Jay Happ were solid, and even Brad Lidge looked like he could be returning to forms, saving three straight games and saving 12 of his last 16 chances, which is a better looking statistic than I think it actually is. That's four times he blew a game. Like, that's, as a closer, it's not good. Bastardo stepped in to fill Myers' spot, and the team even picked back up JC Romero, whose 50-game suspension for PEDs would be over in the middle of their road trip. But everybody knew, Liz, that the Phillies needed some starting pitching. They were about to face the Padres' Jake Peavy, who had been listed as a potential target with
Jake Peavy. Yeah. Wow.
Well, I love looking back and seeing who else they were into. We all know where they addressed their starting pitching in 2009, which is an episode I can't wait to get to.
Oh man.
But it's always fun to see them. I'm reading one story where it was like, oh, the Phillies missed out on their top free agent target, Alfonso Soriano, last year. And I was like, oh shit. Can you imagine? And that story in 1993 about all the Phillies going home one night thinking the team had made a deal for Randy Johnson. Like, oh my God, the what ifs just kill you. They just kill you.
They'll break your brain. It'll make you cry.
Well, in any case, with Myers out, Charlie Manuel was done speaking in code. He was being really open with where he wanted to see improvements. He said, I don't care if it's outside the system, inside the system, whatever. We definitely need to upgrade our pitching. So, yeah, the same things were going on back then, though. All-star voting had started with Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Howard among the league leaders, as well as Raul Ibanez, who moved from sixth to second in voting to join Ryan Braun and Alfonso Soriano among the league's best. This was the sign of the Phillies fans adopting him, because his success with their team was all they needed to stuff ballot boxes full of papers bearing his name. Liz, I'll just throw this out there. Your favorite Raul Ibanez memory?
The one thing I think of when I think of Raul Ibanez is that he was the first player I noticed that he played when he, in between at bats, or swings, he would rest his bat directly on his crotch as he adjusted his gloves. He was the first player I ever noticed who did that, because I'm deranged, I guess. But that's like my besides his perfectly smooth, round, bald head and general just incredible niceness.
You made me so happy I asked that question. Thank you so much. Yes.
You're welcome.
The general niceness, I mean, I'm finding as I get older that was something I appreciated about players without realizing it when I was younger. That just, like, when a player is a genuine good person, you're just like, mm-hmm. A part of you just goes like, oh, thank God. Like, he's not a piece of trash. Andrew McCutchen, same thing. It was just like, man,
yes.
So nice.
Oh, I miss him.
Be able to just like relax and not be like, oh, is this guy gonna like papelbon somebody or something? Like, Ibanez routinely voted one of the most well-liked and appreciated and nice guys in baseball. So my favorite thing with Ibanez was actually in the Roy Oswalt game, where Roy Oswalt had to go play left field because of all the movement. I think Chooch was playing third and Raul was playing first, and people always talk about the fly ball that Oswalt caught in left field, but Ibanez made a way better play. He had to make a tough stop at first base, and David Herndon was pitching, and he's running to the bag to cover. Ibanez is like, no, fuck that. Runs to the bag, does like a diving with his glove outstretched, gets there, place goes crazy, and then as they get up, Herndon's like all worked up trying to high five him, and they like don't quite align on the high five, and it's this like awkward fist bump high five thing as they're jogging off the field. Oh, it was terrific. But
Royo's Hawk game, man. Oh, so good. All of it.
Yeah. Well, in any case, things were good. Jamie Moyer was going deeper into games, dropping that season ERA from 8.15 to 6.11. Howard and Ibanez combined hit 16 home runs in the past 17 games, leading up to June 2nd's game with the Pirates. The team was 13-4. Utley was hitting .339. Pedro Feliz was hitting .328. Carlos Ruiz was crushing the ball, too. He was hitting .340. They started June winning 7 of their first 10, including a series in New York against the Mets after this West Coast trip, in which they swept the Padres and split a four-game series with the Dodgers. They took 2 of 3 from the Mets, crushing Johan Santana in Game 1 with 4 home runs, but watching Jay Happ be unable to put the game away. No matter. The Phillies won the next two, losing Brad Lidge to the 15-day DL, solving that problem inadvertently, just as he was starting to get in his groove, unfortunately. But the Mets were so depleted by injuries that the Phillies pretty much just punched through them like wet paper. So more talk was bubbling about who the Phillies would be buying at the trade deadline. Ruben Amaro talked about how they needed a frontline starter and bullpen help, but he said if he had his way, he'd get both. What a concept.
Yeah.
So nevertheless, a miraculous Jason Wirth catch and a timely Chase Utley homer in game two against the Mets led to a 5-4 win. This was also the game in which Carlos Beltran, I don't know if you remember this, was tracking a Ryan Howard fly ball, but like at the last second, let it doink off the palm of his glove, firing on all cylinders, those Mets. But the Phillies took the series.
I have friends that can name that moment as one of the reasons why they hate Carlos Beltran for no reason. Yes,
I can't tell if that's the same one where he's like backing up and like backs right up into the fence and the ball goes over his head and over the fence, because that's a good one too. A lot of good Carlos
Beltran. He had some true derps. He really did. He was such a great player. But those mind farts really just sort of soured the Mets fandom on him forever. The worst reasons, no reason. It's so dumb.
I don't know. I mean, I appreciate him.
Oh, I love him so much. He's wonderful.
But the Phillies took the series, though they lost reliever Scott Ayer for what Manuel guessed would be, quote, a while. So Jimmy Rollins said they had to go 7-3 on the trip. When we left, we were in first place. If we came home not in first place, we knew it wasn't going to be a pleasant place to be. He's referring to Citizens Bank Park there. So I always loved how Jimmy talked like to and about the fans. That always made me feel very seen. Well, they were still, you know, they still were, you know, it was still a pleasant place to be. But now was the beginning of their worst competition, interleague play. In their worst month, June, a time when they were historically 19-32 against American League teams. And the first contest would be against the Red Sox, who most people assumed, you know, were going to be headed back to the playoffs that year. So this is when the trouble began. They dropped 2 of 3 to Boston. Then they lost 6 straight to the Blue Jays and Orioles. During the last game against the Orioles, a 2-1 loss that hinged on a missed call by the first base umpire regarding a tag of Ty Wigginton on Jimmy Rollins, Charlie Manuel pretty much just yelled at the ump until his anger was outside of him. The Phillies managed to keep their opposition from scoring 5 runs, something they'd failed to do in their last 8 games, but obviously couldn't get their own offense going. From June 12th until the end of the month of June, the Phillies played 16 games and won 4 of them. They were brain farting like crazy against the Rays on one key play. Pedro Feliz was doubled off first on a fly ball, and Matt Stairs, who was coming in to score, just didn't run hard enough to beat the out, so the run didn't count. I mean, so often you see that play and you always hear Tom McCarthy going, oh, he's out, but the run counts. Like, but that play, nope, run didn't count. Matt Stairs just couldn't kick that Canadian torso into high gear. So somehow they still held a 2-game lead in the NL East. In one game, the winning run was scored for the Rays by Gabe Kapler, who successfully avoided a tag being applied by Chase Utley. And so, with things in the shitter, Charlie Manuel removed his star Jimmy Rollins from the next game, giving the shortstop a day off after a hitless performance and a stupid mistake at shortstop. I want him to sit down, Charlie Manuel said. I want him to get away. Jimmy is trying to do things instead of being relaxed. But things were about to get much, much better in July. And in fact, in June, their record was 11-15, which is not good, but certainly better than you'd expect at first glance. And they, you know what? They never even dropped out of first place during that entire stretch. So, hey, you know what? I think Charlie had the right idea. Just Jimmy's, you know, sometimes you're just trying too hard to do things. And I think the 2019 Phillies could probably benefit from that lesson as well. That a lot.
Yeah, get relaxed, guys. They need some good old Charlie Manuel desk eating.
Everybody come into my office, get a bite. This fresh.
We're gonna sit here and chew until it goes down. It'll be a while.
Nobody's going anywhere until this desk is inside us. No wonder all the meetings are closed door meetings. Well, folks, that is all the time we have on this episode of Continued Success. I hope you enjoy our journey through 2009. It's certainly fun for us to go back through and remember all of the good times from that season. We'll be back next week with even more memories from 2009, including the start of the hot, hot month of July for the Phillies. They were so good in July that year. So that'll be a lot of fun. And as always, subscribe, download, and rate all the podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, this podcast, Continued Success with me and Liz, and The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We have a lot of fun doing these episodes. We appreciate you listening. And we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/hittenseason. You can find a ton of bonus content there. We do movie reviews. We do baseball book reviews. We do This Week in Phillies History. John Stolness has a series on baseball cards that I know he loves. He's very passionate about doing this. So it's just $5. You get access to a whole bunch of bonus content about the Phillies and about baseball, and it's a lot of fun. So we will be with you for the rest of the season. And, you know, beyond. I don't know why I'm scheduling a cutoff point, barring any unforeseen cataclysms. So, we will talk to you next week on Continued Success.